Welcome inside the Morning Tailgate Midweek Edition. We are officially turning the page from week one into week two. Not that we're not going to talk about what we saw, what happened in week one, but we are officially making our way to week two and into Baltimore. Coming up on the show at 8:30, Marcus Johnson. Tape don't lie on YouTube. We got a lot of stuff to break down, specifically on the offensive side of the ball. 9 o'clock, we continue our Once a Raider, Always a Raider segment, where we talk to an esteemed member and a proud member of the Raiders fraternity that is known as the alumni, TJ Hujmanzada. We're going to have a spelling test, I'm sure, at some point today, boys, on how that goes. Former Raider, also former Raven, coincidentally. And then 945 Street Legal with Sam and Ash. But before we turn on the barbecue and start to put the drinks on ice, we would be remiss on this show if we did not start by honoring for a moment and looking back on what is today and what it represents. September 11th, 23 years ago. It's one of those days, guys, that we all know where we were, when we saw it, when it happened. And as we honor and we pray for the families and look back on that day, I can't help but think on a day like today and think of the late, great Jim Fossil, former Giants head coach, who was there during that time, and he moved out to Las Vegas in his final years, was always gracious with me. And I remember being at his house doing a story on the XFL, coincidentally, and he showed me he had a portion of his home that was dedicated to the memorabilia and stuff from his time with the Giants, and I would say about 90% of it was stuff in memorial of 9/11 and different trinkets and again, memorabilia from that day. And I just remember how passionate he was talking about what that day meant for him, not just that season, not just that team, but it followed him wherever he went, even after he was done with football, what that day meant, what it meant to be an American that day. And, you know, that's what I think about on a day like today and as we try and honor those that we lost.
Yeah, I vividly remember exactly where I was. Heard about the first plane, on my way to the gym that morning. I drove to, my gym was in Encino, California, and then got to the gym, got dressed, you know, for my workout, and then went out, and there were a bunch of TVs, and obviously the news was about it, and we're all kind of watching it and, you know, trying to figure out, well, what exactly happened? Was it just, you know, a plane that, you know, crashed, basically? You know, just thinking along those lines more than anything else. And all of a sudden, we're all sitting there, and there's probably a good 100 people they're hovering around all the bay of televisions in front of the elliptical machines, and all of a sudden this other plane comes into the comes into the TV screen and just hits the other building, and there's like this audible just gasp, like, and I think every one of us understood something's not right right now. Something obviously is going on. This is an attack. This is something that's not just an accident. This is an intentional. And I just remember crying so much that day, you know, after you realize kind of what was going on. And then, you know, over at the Pentagon and the plane that you know, the heroic people in Pennsylvania were able to kind of wrestle that and paid, obviously, the ultimate price for it. It's just something that I'll never, ever forget, exactly where I was, how I felt, and just that aftermath of sorrow and anger more than anything. It was the ultimate sucker punch of all time, how they attacked us and how they got away with that. And it still to this day angers me.
Yeah, terrorism is definitely a betrayal. And I remember being here in Las Vegas and driving up and down the strip where you saw a lot of people just kind of like staring off into the distance, like, what's happened here, and like how wide open this town was and was not ready for any sort of attack. And in fact, this town was really scared about, you know, are people going to stop traveling? And for a long time it did. It was a kind of like a strange moratorium of people were afraid to get on planes, and Las Vegas really suffered during some of those first months after that, because the perception of traveling, it just wasn't around anymore. And like, how safe are these certain cities from something else happening again? And Las Vegas definitely had to go and change its direction and try to become considerably more secure than what it used to be.
Yeah, a good friend, Mark, or Pat Kerwin, who hosts, you know, Moving the Chains over on NFL, Sirius NFL, always tells a story about how he took a train in that morning. He would go in. He was working for, I think, CBS at the time, and so they had their, you know, their weekly meeting or whatever it was. And every morning that he would go into New York City from where he was, you know, he took the train in and the Long Island Railroad. And so on the way back, he gets to the parking lot. If you've ever been to one of those, you drive your car, you park at the train station, you get on the train, you come back later on that evening. Yeah, and go home and drive home. Well, there were a whole bunch of cars at all these various stops, you know, along the railway, and it was a lot of fathers who worked in at the two buildings that never came home, and so a lot of widows were left behind as a result of that, and the NFL kind of got together a lot of the older coaches. Coach Fossil might have been a part of this, but. You know, the moms are like, how are we going to teach our sons how to play football? How to, you know, so a lot of Bill Walsh and some former coaches all got together and held like clinics for the moms to be able to
help teach the game.
Help teach the game. And then later on, those kids from that kind of program, you know, grew up and now they're obviously young adults, but some of them went on to get college scholarships and stuff. And so in a small way, the NFL was able to help, and I always get teary-eyed when I think about that because it was just a small gesture, but a beautiful gesture.
Yeah, and Jim Fossil, again, circling it back to as we kind of cap this, is Jim Fossil, former Raiders quarterback coach, obviously was head coach during that time. The Giants played Monday Night Football the night before September 11th in Denver, and that was the game Denver opened up at that time in Vesco Field. That was also the game Ed McCaffrey broke his leg mid-game. Mm. So when you talk about, you know, we're bringing it back now, Christian McCaffrey's playing, and he didn't play on Monday night. And it's just, again, we hear the term never forget, and it's one of those things that's always true, but it's not just on this day. It's we will never forget. And as we try now to pivot and turn the page a little bit here on the morning tailgate to week two of the NFL, it's interesting. We woke up this morning, guys, and at first, I saw the outside, and my wife goes, hey, it's fall. Is it finally cool? Can we open up the windows? And when I went to go take out the dog, boy, it is not weather you want to be outside. A lot of fire smoke, the fires that the firefighters are battling in Southern California, up in Reno, the Davis fire. So, again, we think about those that are fighting that, but when you bring it back to Vegas, what does that mean? Well, the Raiders are supposed to practice for the first time today. It is highly unlikely they're going to be practicing outdoors. Mm-hmm. Going to make use of that indoor facility, Clay.
Yeah, and it's thick. You can't even see the sun right now. It's something that it lingers in, even in our building, which is soundproof and it's got all these layers. It's in the back of your throat as soon as you walk in here. You can taste it. What's happening outside, and that's a credit because at least they have this a field and a half to work on, right? Indoors. That is something that you can't take for granted that it's good for what they have in Henderson at Raiders HQ. But at the same time, what kind of work can you get done right now, and where do you start from where you need to make adjustments from last Sunday?
Yeah, and thankfully for them, they have the indoor facility. Yeah. It's they'll be able to get their work in today. But what I'm monitoring right now as well, and
it's here right now. It is in our nose at the moment.
No question about it. And so what I'm monitoring though is Lamar Jackson and his status. I don't know what time the Ravens practice today. They're 3 hours ahead of us, obviously. So we'll be getting word here pretty soon if he's on the field. And I'm looking at the statistics from that Ravens game against the Chiefs. And, we all know that Lamar dropped about 10 pounds, I think it was.
Well, there's reports out there that say he dropped 30 when he was at his maximum weight a season ago.
Right.
So let's say
he lost weight.
He lost a good portion of weight.
Right, and there was a reason for that. And he wanted to get quicker again. He wanted to get faster. And why does he want to do that? Because a big part of his game is his legs and being able to run the ball. He led the Ravens with 16 carries, and a few of those, more than a few of those, were designed runs. Obviously, others were scramble mode, escaping pressure and taking off downfield. 16 carries, 122 yards, which is a great obviously those are spectacular numbers for your quarterback, but already
He's already feeling it.
Maybe. We don't know. We don't know. But I'm assuming.
Let's not speculate.
Yeah, right. I mean, chances, it seems like that might be. It could be. Maybe he's sick. We don't know.
Yeah.
But this is the trade-off that you have with Lamar Jackson, because as spectacular as he is with his mm-hmm. legs, and there's no questioning that. We all love to watch it. I mean, he's mm-hmm. one of the most electrifying players to ever step foot on the field, and as a fan of football, you love it. But there is a fine line there for the Ravens and for Lamar Jackson. And when I was watching that game against the Kansas City Chiefs, what I noticed was he was trying to lay the wood. There were runs where he was dropping his shoulder and trying to run over somebody. He was not running away from physicality. He was running to it, and in some cases, initiating it. And if I'm John Harbaugh and I'm the Baltimore Ravens, and I know that there's such a fine line, I know the Buffalo Bills deal with the same exact thing with Josh Allen. Hey, it's week one. There's 17 games. That first down is important right now, but it's not more important than you. And trying to manage that as a team, especially when Lamar, as we just talked about, purposely redid his body in order to be more effective mm-hmm. as a runner, I'm scared if I'm John Harbaugh. I'm scared if I'm in the Ravens of what that could mean. It's already week one, and he's missing some practices, and we're probably right in assuming that it had something to do with 16 carries, 122 yards, and not running away from physicality. What is that going to look like in week 7? What is that going to look like in week 14 for him?
You know, I think it's fascinating. I agree with everything you said. However, I kind of look at it as, all right, how much of that when he's like lowering his shoulder, trying to, you know, create some contact on his own, how much is that week one? Like week one adrenaline, week one energy, it was the Chiefs. All the talk is he can't beat the Chiefs, and history says mm-hmm. he can't beat the Chiefs. I'm curious at how much his play was different in week one because of being week one and who they were playing.
Probably a lot.
I would chalk it up to. But doesn't help that you're already missing practice time as a result of it.
And who knows about games at some point. Maybe even this week. We don't know that. And you know, we'll monitor that. But it's, I think, Vince, I think it's more than just he wanted to beat the Chiefs. He purposely redid his body. Like this was an intentional thing. He wants to be able to be a better as a runner this year compared to where he was last year. Because if you remember last year, he bulked up to get a little bit stronger, which obviously if you're adding weight, you're probably losing some agility. So this was purposely done. So I think that this is kind of how he wants to play. And I've told the story, before on air, but I think it bears repeating. When the Rams were thinking about drafting Jared Goff or who's the quarterback from that went to the Philadelphia Eagles, he's with the Carson Wentz. It was close, and there was a lot of. I thought that they were going to take Carson Wentz. I figured when they traded up to get number one, it was for Carson Wentz. He was the bigger, stronger, the athlete, the runner, the this and that. And in the Rams' final determination, Les Snead told me we went all the way back in Carson Wentz's past, and he was a guy that we felt is going to get hurt. And no blame to him. He's just a guy in Little League who would run through the wall. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that would put his body in harm's way to make a play, and we just felt like. While he might be bigger, while he might be stronger, while he might have the bigger arm, eventually he's gonna get hurt. And sure enough, that's exactly what's happened with Carson Wentz. And you have to worry about that with a Lamar Jackson this early in the season, where he's already paid some sort of a price. So certainly something to monitor as early as this week. We'll find out if he's even able to practice on today.
Looking at Lamar's history. He's missed some games to injury, but for a guy that runs as much as he does and gets contact as much as he does, he hasn't missed a lot in the grand scheme of things. And as a two-time MVP, he probably feels like there's a lot on his shoulders.
Let me ask you this real quick. Okay, he doesn't miss games. But where is he physically at the end of the year when his statistics have gone down, especially in the playoffs? Do we think that there's some cause of it? I mean, missing games is one thing. Being healthy when you're playing is an entirely different thing. So when you talk about he runs and he hasn't missed games, but how much of what he does as a player, how he plays, his style of play, the amount of times that he runs and the hits that he takes, how much does that diminish his game when it really counts later on in the season?
Well, I don't think there's any question. Of course it does.
That's
That's any player, though. And every player, every player takes on a taxing toll as the season goes on regardless. When he bulked up, it was clear that he couldn't do the things he could in September that he could in the playoffs. When reading up on what he was doing in the offseason, the purpose for him to lean up was so that he could last longer and treat his body better early so that it would last later. And by leaning up, he felt that that was the way to do it. I'm not going to sit there and say that's the right or wrong decision.
Yeah, I don't know that.
I don't know that makes a lot of sense right there. But he said he wanted to lean up. He wanted to feel better in terms of how he ran because he wants to be quicker. But again, it is interesting when you look at week one and he's taking on a lot of contact. That's why I say I'm curious how much of that was just like an adrenaline pump, just like it's Kansas City. I just want to kind of make a statement out here. So until I see it repeated, and I know he missed a practice, and we'll see what his status is when,
maybe
when
that's the wake-up call.
Maybe it is. And maybe John Harbaugh's like, hey.
We talked about this.
You feel better now? Is that out of your system? Can we move on? But what I found fascinating about week one was he led the team in rushing.
He had the most carries.
After Clay. They got Derrick Henry.
You spent money on Derrick Henry.
Derrick Henry is the eighth highest paid running back in the National Football League. Now, John Harbaugh, playing a little defense this week, came out and said, we're not going to run Derrick Henry 30 times a game. That was never the plan, which is fine. I think it's unrealistic to play any running back 30 times a game. Maybe 30 touches is a different story for like a Christian McCaffrey, maybe a Breece Hall, but...
The 49ers runner had
Jordan Mason had 28 carries.
But even when they had Dobbins and Edwards, they would split carries.
Yeah, so, but what I'm saying is, looking back, the last time Derrick Henry was outrushed in a game was 2018. Last time somebody on his team, somebody had more rushing attempts than him. What does that say? Is Derrick Henry the guy from 3 years ago?
No.
But, I mean... 13 carries, and I know, I believe he was just under 3 yards average. It was 3.5.
That's
3.5
still,
average, which is probably substandard for him.
For sure.
His longest run was a 9-yard gain. You talk about longevity of a season, right? 16 carries for 122 yards for Lamar Jackson, 41 pass attempts.
That's a busy day.
I get you're the two-time MVP. I get you're the guy over there. That's a lot.
I'm just saying that's
living and dying by your quarterback.
That's too much. He already has gotten hurt, it seems like.
That's too much.
Yeah.
That's just too much. I know that's what Lamar is good at, and so you're going to have designed
runs.
That's
the fine
line. But, man, 16 carries after you're dropping back 41 times.
How many times did Jaden Daniels run it?
I got to bring that up.
Because didn't he have 80 yards rushing? He had
88 yards rushing on, internet's being slow. I'll get you those numbers. We have plenty more here on the Morning Tailgate. We have loads of time. Yeah. So I'll get you those numbers here. So coming up, plenty more. Going to get you Jaden Daniels' numbers.
Yeah,
I've got some interesting numbers regarding one Gardner Minshew. It's the Tailgate.
Yeah, he's definitely as good as it gets, as dynamic as it gets, the definition of a dual threat. He presents a great challenge to any defense in this league. So I'm sure, the coaches will work hard, Pat will work hard to get a good game plan together so that way we can try and limit some of those things that he does. But even then, it's different when you still got to go against them. But I believe in our guys and I believe in our coaches and our scheme. So we're going to. Rebound and, lock in and do what we got to do this week to try to put ourselves in the best position.
It's Raiders Christian Wilkins, from Monday. We're back here on the Morning Tailgate. Vince, Vinny, and Clay, thank you for being with us. Hit us up on the text line, 702-365-9200. As John Harbaugh, Ravens head coach, says, you know what? There's been some absences in practice, not including, you know, also including Lamar Jackson, but notwithstanding other guys, it's personal, it's physical. The Wednesday injury report that comes out in the afternoon, that will bear in mind a lot. We know that Kyle Van Noy, their linebacker, out with a fractured orbital bone. All right, that's kind of big. And they have a rookie corner, Wiggins, that was also held out in practice. So we'll see what his status is as they approach the game on Sunday morning.
Yeah, I'm wondering if Lamar Jackson will be listed as general soreness after carrying the ball 16 times. And Jaden Daniels, 16 carries as well.
16 carries for Jay in his rookie debut. That's right. Impressive. 88 yards.
Mm-hmm.
That was impressive, to say the least.
Totally impressive, and I just
sustainable.
That's
not so much.
That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah. I mean, it's just not. I mean, we were talking about 16 carries for running backs at this point in the NFL is a lot.
Right.
Now, carries and touches are two different conversations, but when we're talking about just straight carries, 16 is a lot. When you're putting that on your quarterback, and as you said, it's such a delicate and a difficult decision because you don't want your quarterback taking 16 shots like that, almost guaranteed shots, if you will, if you don't get out of bounds. But he's such a weapon.
Yeah.
He's so good
at
it.
Right. And I think, I don't know this to be true, but let me ask you this, Vince. If you're a referee, and when we're talking about 16 carries, I would say 12, 13 of those are literally run plays, run calls.
Yeah, 80%, you know, right? 80-85% are probably design runs.
So, you know, as a game official, are you obligated once the play is called to be a run for your quarterback, and then he becomes literally a running back? Do you officiate it a little bit differently? Because there's never been a, you know, you can't, like running backs aren't allowed to just slide.
Yeah, I'll say this. No matter the situation, the refs look at the quarterback holding the football differently no matter the situation.
They probably do. I'm with you. Yeah. I would, you know.
Should they,
But at
know?
The same time, well, yeah, I think from the league's perspective, this is such a quarterback. Like, we were talking about who the backup quarterback for the Ravens is. It's Josh.
Yeah, we had to look it up.
Josh Johnson.
That a baby, Josh.
Yeah, so there's a major fall off. And I think the NFL, rightfully so, understands how quarterback driven this is, and the product looks a lot better when Lamar Jackson is out there compared to Josh Johnson.
Yeah, you have to protect the product. I get that,
but at the same time, you know,
the integrity of the game and keeping it fair and balanced is also part of the shield.
Exactly. And, well, that too, but also you have to put your shoes in the defense's side and the opponents like that. They are making him a running back at that point, so we should be able to be just as physical as we are with a running back in that situation. And so I do wonder if there's a little bit of, if you want to be a running back on that play, we're going to call it like a running back.
You know what's great? The conversation we're having at this exact moment, you know, Antonio Pierce and the defense Patrick Graham is having with his defense. They're talking about this exact situation.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's one thing that stood out to me more than the rest, week one, was how physical the defense was for the Raiders. They were flying. I mean, absolutely flying around the big, big shots, right? Robert Spillane in particular was a heat-seeking missile on just about every play. 10 tackles, led the team, was on fire.
Throws across the middle. Marcus Epps was on that too.
I mean, they were flying. And, you know, again, a lot of that first week, adrenaline, a lot of energy, you're feeling fresh, you're feeling good. Week two, I mean, you're not far removed. Everyone's going to be a little sore after week one, right? It's the first game.
For sure.
But you don't think there's a conversation happening right now saying it has to be controlled. He's going to have the ball a lot. He's going to be running. You cannot put yourself in a position that costs the team.
Yeah.
When we're talking these headshots, lowering the crown, you know, all that kind of stuff that defensive players lose their mind over. But it is, you talk about a point of emphasis this week, maybe more so than any other week.
Well, you talk about a fine line because, number one, when he drops back to pass, you have to be disciplined in how you rush him, the Lamar Jackson, the quarterback. You can't let him. You have to build a fence around him, basically, and then squeeze, you know, kind of like a vice to kind of crash in from both sides and up front too. You know, it takes We talk about it. It takes a village to win games. It takes a village to be able to pass rush against Lamar Jackson and contain him, because the last thing you want him to do is escape that and then go and run for 30 yards. That's number one. But then number two, the challenge of playing a Lamar Jackson is you literally have to devote somebody to him on your defense. You're taking one of your 11 players, regardless of what is happening. Your responsibility is Lamar Jackson, because you have to cover him as a runner as well. So then when they use him on run design plays, now you have to be aggressive. You mm-hmm. can't not be passive. You have to go find him and get him and get him to the ground as quickly as possible, you know, and everybody kind of run to him. But the fact that you're literally taking a defender out of the equation just to devote to him, that's the beauty of having a running and mobile quarterback, is that the defense has to account for him. Nobody's accounting for Gardner Minshew on the opposing defense. Nobody. There's no, if he runs, great, we're going to go find him and tackle him pretty quickly. Just like, what was it, Joey Bosa came across mm-hmm. and hit him on the foot and down he went. Nobody, and I don't remember the last time, maybe when Marcus Mariota went in there for a couple of plays, I don't remember the last time where anybody had to really pay attention defensively. It's such an advantage to have somebody that poses a real threat to be a runner as a quarterback, because you're literally taking a player away from him. Now, and now you're defending everyone else with 10 rather than 11.
And the funny thing about those Mariota reads is that everyone knew that, obviously, he's got a chance to run the ball, so no one was really fooled by mm-hmm. his insertion into the game.
He still had a 34-yard run on his first carry as a Raider. He came in there, and everyone knew he was going to run. He ran for 30 yards, which I think he got hurt on that
and
play.
And he got injured and didn't play for another 6 games, yeah.
You know, he got a by the way, this is what I always wonder about Pro Football Focus. You weren't here when that happened. So he played one play.
Right.
And he gained 30 yards, right? It was mm-hmm. it was 30 plus.
Highest.
If you looked at his if you looked at his PFF grade for that one play, it was like a 60 something. I'm like, "What? How do you come up with, did he miss somebody? Did he not take the wrong angle? Did he not cut the right way? Like your quarterback just, that should be a 100, period. Your quarterback just ran for 30 yards. There's nothing, how do you cheapen that in
offensive
any way?
Coordinators would take that play 100% of the time.
It was a designed run. So it's designed to get, what, maybe 10 yards? You know, mm-hmm. you want to get the first down. He ran for triple that or double that, whatever, triple that. How do you give that a 60-something on your
it wasn't off tackle enough, apparently.
Yes,
you know?
Like that's what, you know? That makes you wonder. Like, how are
he wasn't close enough to the hip of the tackle.
Yeah. It wasn't the way they wanted the
how
design.
Exactly,
run.
Are you coming up with these numbers?
Well, and there is a trend about design runs now. Instead of quarterback scrambles for most of the mobile quarterbacks, mm-hmm. you are now seeing a larger percentage of design runs right. for them, because it seems to be maybe a little bit safer for them, but probably more successful. Mm-hmm. But we see even on the text line, Raider Dave in Denver asking, would the Raiders change up to a 3-4? To kind of mitigate some of the larger runs that could happen from Lamar.
Well, I think it was fascinating the way they came out with the Chargers with that essential five on the line type deal mm-hmm. with Charles Snowden playing a lot of snaps.
He needs to play better. I don't know if you watched this.
Yeah, it was tough.
Yeah, but they asked him to do a lot too.
He played 53% of the snaps. I think it was. I think, you know, players will always say, you know, got to stay ready so you don't get ready. I think there was a lot happening with Charles Snowden going from not making the team to the practice squad to getting elevated to probably playing some spot duty because of Malcolm Kuntz. All of a sudden, Tyree Wilson goes out, and now he's playing.
He started the game, I mean, technically.
Because of the package, yeah.
Yeah.
You bring up PFF. I got some numbers, okay? And we're gonna unpack them, but I want you guys to listen to these numbers. We're going to start with Lamar Jackson, since that's kind of the topic as we are turning the page onto week two. In terms of time to throw, average time to throw, and he had 41 attempts, so he had a pretty large sample size come week one. Lamar Jackson had the second most time to throw of any quarterback in week one, trailing only, and this is shocking, Justin Fields. Mm. He was in the bottom 10 in the NFL in week one in terms of average distance of a throw. Lamar Jackson. So he had the second most time to throw of any quarterback, but he was bottom 10 in the average distance of his throws. to compare Gardner Minshew.
Yeah.
Gardner Minshew was bottom five average distance of a throw, and he was on the plus side of the time to throw in terms of this flow chart, but he had the 13th most time. So right in the middle. Right in the middle of the NFL week one. So
not bad.
What does that tell us? What it tells me in terms of Gardner Minshew is that pass protection was just what we've been saying it was. It was just okay.
Yeah.
A lot of dinking and dunking.
Right.
Bottom five, you are nothing but dinking and dunking. And I think I counted, I don't know where you had a video, I counted two throws over the 15-yard threshold. Two.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah.
Gardner didn't – The Raiders did not push the ball. It was what I'm saying. And we're going to get into Marcus Johnson.
There was
Johnson.
No concept of a plan.
If you don't have a threat to run at quarterback and not a threat to throw, there could be some problems.
Right. In an hour, Marcus Johnson is going to help kind of break down some of the tape that we've been talking about the last couple days in terms of, all right, is Gardner being impatient? Is it what these numbers flesh out in terms of Gardner? Offensive line was okay, but he still did not push the ball when you're bottom five in average yards of throw and you're hovering around the 5-yardage marker when you're talking about distance.
Quick question for you. When you go back to Lamar's time to throw him,
yes.
The first thing I automatically think about, and especially with Spags as the Kansas City Chiefs defensive coordinator, how much of that was the offensive line was playing well, or was that kind of by design? What I'm talking about, being disciplined in how you rush him, you can tactically do that, because what you almost prefer to do for Lamar is have him throw from the pocket and operate there, because that's probably not his ultimate strength. And you also don't want him to leak out by being overly aggressive and then break off a 30-40 yard run as a result. So I do wonder if those numbers are a little bit deceiving, because we automatically think that's a great job by the offensive line. How much of it was exactly how the Chiefs were rushing?
And that's kind of what I was kind of alluding to in that aspect. When you look at Gardner, Gardner's not moving.
Not at all.
He's not moving. So when you look at his, you can say the O-line was average, but he wasn't pushing the ball down the field regardless. When it comes to Lamar, part of it is that fence you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Could it be the defense that they're playing? It's also Lamar's ability to create time in the pocket. Even if he's not running for yardage, he's still creating time in the pocket, whether he moves to his right, he moves to his left, he does a little spin move to get out of a sack. So when you talk about his average time is a little more than 2.75 seconds to throw, I mean, a lot of that has to do with his ability to move.
That's probably something that they should qualify, right?
You would think.
Because, you know, is it legitimately, does he legitimately have, let's say, just say, to throw a number out there, 3 seconds to pass, or is it really two, and then he's got to break off and run around in the pocket to throw? I wonder, maybe they do. Maybe they bake it into that, and we just don't.
Either way, Lamar's numbers, times to throw, will always inherently be higher because of that, because you would think if that's the caveat.
Right.
But, again, the interesting part with Lamar is that he's still bottom 10 in average distance of a throw. So, and I got to be honest, there was only one.
Is that historically
three, four, five,
or just one
six,
week?
7, 8, 9. There was only 10 quarterbacks that had an average distance throw over 8 yards.
Right.
So, what does that tell me? There was a lot of dinking and dunking. There was a lot of teams did not push the ball down the field.
And
to your that question, that was just week one.
Okay.
Not historically.
Thank you. That opens up a bigger question where I think teams are playing that kind of defensive look. Like you can dink and dunk. And if you want to get into the red zone, great. That's when we're going to tighten up. That's where we feel like we need to – we'll win that battle defensively. But we're not going to give you anything over the top. We're not going to give away big plays like that. We're going to take our chances that, A, you're either going to make a mistake or we're going to knock you down before the first down marker. But even if you do drive into the red zone, now it becomes that battle, and we feel good about our ability to defend you in that part of the field, as opposed to teams are just not – offensive are just not – taking those chances. And I can't imagine that offenses aren't arbitrarily not taking those chances. It feels like defenses are designing themselves to take away the long ball and do more what we're talking about. Let him dink and dunk. Mm-hmm. Let him. I mean, that was Pete Carroll's philosophy. Let him run 13 plays, and you know, good. You're gonna drive 13 plays. You're probably gonna make a mistake at some point. You're gonna throw an interception. You're gonna fumble. You're gonna throw it wide, and now you're gonna have to punt it away. So I do wonder if that's kind of a tactical thing by defenses nowadays.
Fun stat: Anthony Richardson led all quarterbacks in average distance of a throw of over 16 yards per throw. A lot of it had to do with that 65-yard bomb.
Yeah, 65 air yards to Alex Pierce in the end zone. That thing was up there for a while. It was awesome to watch. We'll get into more of this. And coming up next, we'll continue our look at the Ravens and get your thoughts up on the text line, 702-365-9200. And speaking of the game on Sunday morning, join me. I'll be at the Raiders Road Rally at Barcode Burger on East Flamingo. That's east of Maryland Parkway. If you've ever been to one of these, you know it's a huge Raiders bash. You have Raiders alumnus hanging out, Raiderettes, signed memorabilia, jerseys, gift cards to Raiders Image, and tickets to the game, food and drink specials, Coors Light specials. So join me 10 a.m. Sunday morning at Barcode Burger, East Flamingo, east of Maryland Parkway, this Sunday against the Ravens.
Back to the Morning Tailgate with Vinny, Vince, and Clay on Raider Nation Radio.
I can feel this on a midweek morning tailgate. Vinny, Vince, and Clay wrapping up the first hour here. You know, a story, there's stories that just don't end. Guys, there's just stories that don't end here in Vegas when it comes to the Raiders. And even when players move on from the Raiders to another team, there's just stories that continue and need to be
told. Bite. What?
You know, he's the story and he's a gift that keeps on giving. Mac Hollins. Raiders, right? Wide receiver, no-shoe-wearing...
Does not like shoes.
Legend.
You have to ask Mac to stop running sometimes, because he just likes to run.
A savant of the Mac Mile, which he tried to get many of his teammates to do, begrudgingly. Many of them hated it. It was Mac Hollins' workout after workouts, and... especially the offensive linemen he was trying to get, just they could not understand it. But Mac Hollins, Vinny, is at it again.
Uh-oh.
In case you guys weren't paying attention, Buffalo had a big win, a little comeback win. Mm-hmm. Mac Hollins with the Bills scored his first ever week one touchdown. Was a big part of the offense for the Buffalo Bills this week.
Effective in the slot now, you can see it.
Yeah, it was very good. It looked good. Mm-hmm. Looked really good, and it was a real weapon. Well, as we learned last year during his time in Vegas, after...
Atlanta.
During his time with the Raiders.
2 years ago, right? Kind of all 2022. 2022,
yes. Two. Excuse me. See, you got to keep me on track. My timelines are very bad.
Same thing with me.
2 years ago.
Yes.
Started, and it might have started beyond that, but this is where I first learned of it. When the Raiders won a game, Mac would treat himself. Now, he's a guy that is all about organic and earth.
Still have the honey he gave me from New Zealand.
Go. There you go.
Yeah, it's a big, huge box of, and it's really good, by the way.
So when the Raiders would win, he would treat himself, and he would get a bottle of water, and he would put M&Ms in it. And he would let it sit for like 2 hours, I believe. And then he would indulge himself and he would drink it. Well, he has brought that to Buffalo.
We gotta do that here.
I would love to.
Let's
just to see what happens.
I want to see what the
Well, here's the thing. There's prep work apparently involved because he did it and obviously went viral because he's, you know, the Bills, TikTok stars, and all that stuff. Kyle Brandt on Good Morning Football wanted to see what the craze was all about.
Right.
And so he did it on air. Put the M&Ms did, and it made the water just look like gross. And he drank it, and he's like,
"Because it's all the various colors,
yeah,
right?"
And it was just chocolate water.
Looks like when you're a kid and you're doing your painting at school.
Yeah, exactly. But the problem is, Mac already sounded off on X saying you have to let it marinate in the fridge for 2 hours.
Marinate, okay, in cold.
I would guess cold. So what we need to do is, after a Raiders win, We'll each get a water bottle, put some M&Ms in it, put it in the fridge. After 2 hours, we'll bring it.
You know it's going to taste good.
Has to, right?
Of course, M&Ms.
M&Ms are delicious.
I'm going to have to live like
normal or peanut M&Ms.
I'm a peanut, more so than the regular
peanut or crisp. M&M crisps.
Never indulged.
Clay. Those are interesting. I like those. M&M. You don't only see them around like the holidays, like Halloween or Christmas. Try to get the crisps anytime you want to. Not so easy out here.
I remember when the crisps first came out, I lost my mind. I thought the world was upside down, and I thought this is what it's about. This is what life's about.
The gods are listening to me. This is what I've always wanted.
You know when I knew there was a God? First time I ever had to take my kids to Chuck E. Cheese. I had never gone to Chuck E. Cheese prior to that. But you have kids and young kids, you got to do the whole thing. They sell beer.
They sell beer? Yeah.
I was like, there is a God.
Chucky knows what's up.
But Chucky is very watchful about the beer.
I was hammered.
You could only have one beer an hour.
What?
Yes, they give you like a pitcher of beer, but it's one an hour.
Not if you pay off the mouse.
Clay's at Chuck E. Cheese, gets a pitcher of beer, 10 minutes later, all right, I'll take... sir, you have 50 minutes.
I'm strangling Chucky for another pitcher. Give it to me, mouse!
You know how they give you the wristbands? Yeah. In California, there was like, I think it was in Van Nuys, but this group of families got into major trouble because they would drop their kids off on a Saturday. They would get the kids would get their wristbands, the parents would get their wristbands, the parents would hightail it out of there, do whatever it was that they were doing, leaving the kids at Chuck E. Cheese, mm-hmm. using Chuck E. Cheese basically as a daycare center.
Oh, that's bad news.
Knowing that they weren't going to be able to leave because you have to have the color, right. You know. So, and they did this continuously, and then they finally, that Chuck E. Cheese was like, hold on a second. So, yeah, can you imagine?
I've been to a Chuck E. Cheese in recent years, and nothing is more frustrating than children without parents or paying attention parents. Oh,
right.
God.
There's a lot of that. You see that at the airport. Little kids running around making
noise.
Yeah,
what's that about?
And I'm like, can you, like, and here's the thing, and you're in this situation now. We've all been there. And I didn't let my kids just go running around creating havoc at the airport. When most of the time, as you're getting ready to go on the plane, you kind of want to relax. You want to chill. You want to. You don't need the noise. And when you have,
you're already tense because you're just around so many people. You got things to do. You got things on your mind. Where are you going? For us, it's work when we're at the airport more often than
not.
Are you
an early getter?
Yes.
To the airport?
Yes.
I am too.
Yes. I like to be set. I like to know where my surroundings are. I like to go. You know, maybe walk around a little
bit. Adam Hill has kind of this theory that if he has to sit in the gate longer than 40 minutes, he failed miserably. I'm like, he pushes it right to the limit.
He'd rather be huffing and puffing all the way
to
the gate.
I need to be at the gate. You know, I'll spend $80,000 for a beer.
If anybody knows Adam, though, he likes to live dangerously.
Yeah, if there's not a challenge to it, then it's just not going to happen. It's not. He doesn't want anything easy. There's no layups.
Did I tell you? He's covering the UFC fight.
Yeah, he's going to be with me at the Sphere Saturday night.
He's Ubering it to the airport. It's late Saturday night
but the event,
to catch a red eye to Baltimore.
The Sphere event is scheduled to end at 10. We all know with UFC, it never ends on
time.
He's
been given assurances. Has he told you this?
He has. I talked to him yesterday when I was at the UFC. He's like, no, it's going to end at 10. I go, okay, well, when's your flight? He's like, 10.
Dana told me.
He's like, 11:30. I go, 11:30?
Right.
Even if it ends perfectly at 10 o'clock, that is. He's like,
and
there's no
on-site for Uber. You have to kind of walk a distance.
Yeah.
But he's been given assurances that they're going to have an Uber right.
The airport on Saturday night here in Las Vegas is dead, right?
Right.
You know, like it's so easy to just walk in and, you know, do what you want. We'll be back after this. More to come.
See,
here
that feels like the sit down, the assurances.
That's a game. Yeah.